Papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city death.
Media Project gives you insight into newsroom decision-making and some commentary on what's going on in the news media today. I'm Rex Smith, your host here with Ira Fussfeld, former publisher of the Daily Freeman of Kingston, publisher emeritus he is.
Hello, Rex.
How do? Wonderful to see you, Ira. With Barbara Lombardo, the former executive editor of the Saratogian and the Record of Troy. If you nod your head, they can't see it on the microphone.
They can't hear the shaking of the marbles. Okay. Hello.
Lesson in radio here. And Ian Pickus, the news director of Northeast Public Radio, WAMC.
Ahoy, hoy.
There we go. See, that's what you need to do, Barbie.
Ahoy, matey.
There you go.
See?
See? All right. We have an important topic here, an astounding moment, and of course, that is the NBC fiasco. If you missed it, the hiring of the former Republican National Committee Chair, Rona McDaniel, who was, by the way, deposed by Donald Trump to make room for his daughter-in-law and others at the head of the RNC. Rona McDaniel was hired by NBC News as a commentator at a rate of about $300,000 a year, and subsequently, rather immediately cut after 4 days on the payroll after an extraordinary on-air revolt by leading stars led off on Sunday morning on Meet the Press. And we now see that there is a pushback to the pushback where the right wing is saying, of course, NBC doesn't want to have commentary from a conservative. So there are a lot of issues to unpack here. Ira, we'll let you be the senior guy in the room and say, why would NBC turn down an opportunity to have on the air a representative from the Republican National Committee?
Well, that's the argument that the right wing will make. The issue here is not that she had espoused the views of right wing or Republican politicians, but that she was an election denier, that she had no credibility as a result of that, and that she, as a sidebar during her tenure at the committee, was constantly blasting NBC and NBC News. This thing, though, is just such a failure based on everything that we know published and broadcast already, is such a failure on the part of top management at NBC. Whether or not they were correct in considering this person, how they could do it without at least tipping off their on-air people and have no sense ahead of time of what was going to happen once this announcement was made, it's just mind-boggling to me. It's just such a failure, and it's such a lack of being in touch. And I, you know, by the time this program airs, it would not shock me if one or more of those people will have resigned.
Barbara, is it unthinkable, though, to have somebody who has been hostile to media to take a role like this?
Absolutely not. But it's not a question in this case of somebody who is hostile to the media. The airwaves are full of people who are hostile to the media. The question here, as Ira rightly pointed out, is that this is an election denier. This is someone who has told untruths on behalf of Trump. And to suddenly think that this person merits an audience which gives that person credibility is a terrible mistake. You know, I had mixed feelings about whether NBC should have tipped off its big name newscasters. So as a manager, and you were a higher level boss than I was even, Ira, you know, there's times when you want to make a decision, but you're not asking the permission of the people that work for you. You're trying to make a right decision.
No, but you're getting a sense of what they feel like. What do you think of this person if we consider hiring them? He doesn't have to do what they say, but he should at least give them a tip.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And it was astounding to me that they wouldn't take somebody like Rachel Maddow aside before making this decision, saying, you know, we're negotiating with Ronna Romney McDaniel, we might add.
Which name she dropped because Romney being too...
And just to hear out what I thought Rachel Maddow was especially eloquent on her show Monday night, and I would commend people to listen to that because she featured cases from the past where the legitimacy given to a lying outlier fascist in the past where their candidacies failed because they didn't have the legitimacy behind them of the Republican Party or any major party. And she spoke out against Ronna McDaniel, as did just about every other name on the station, right?
So, Ian, it's a standard is we can't hire people who won't tell the truth. You're going to be narrowing the field of who can be commentators. It's almost as though the audience is selecting the platform that they want to listen to the news on, and the news then caters to that platform.
Yeah, the NPR media reporter who's terrific, David Folkenflik, made, I thought, what was the best point I've heard about this, which is have her on. You don't need to pay her $300,000 a year to appear on your programming. Every outlet since early in the 2016 campaign has taken certain steps to reach a more conservative audience. They've hired people who worked on the campaign. They've put people like Corey Lewandowski on the Sunday shows because they know, okay, we have misjudged the audience, and maybe there's a way to reach a segment of the population that wants to hear these viewpoints, and they're not getting them in general. I think that's all fine. The question is, why bring them into the tent? Why pay them to appear on your programming when now, in 2024, it is not hard to get that viewpoint represented? And as we've talked about on this show, to challenge it, not to platform it.
Right.
I agree with Ian 100%. I've long been a critic and a chauvinist about this. Pat Buchanan is Exhibit A. As somebody who runs for office, loses, and then jumps over and is given a paid spot on a high-profile place to be. Yes, as Ian says, these people can be interviewed and should be interviewed, but don't put them on your payroll. It hurts your credibility.
Well, let's look at how that has become tradition, however. This actually analysis by Axios, the news organization, 16 out of the last 31 White House press secretaries and communication directors, that is dating back to 2000, 16 out of 31 have gone on to become paid contributors, commentators, or hosts of news programs. But it's not only that. Of course, George Stephanopoulos was communication director in the Clinton White House. He now has a platform as a senior anchor at ABC News. There are people who, of course, go on to do credible work. Nicole Wallace, who was a communications director for George W. Bush, is now a host on MSNBC. She spent some years, as Stephanopoulos did, sort of doing lesser things before she was sort of trusted to actually have her own program, trusted in the sense of saying, well, this person was once a flack, was paid to shape communications. I'm such a person. I spent 4 years in my youth as a congressional press secretary. I worked for a partisan. I helped to get the guy reelected after having been the editor of a little tiny newspaper in his district. Much lesser platform, but I'll tell you, having been someone who was charged with rather intentionally slanting storytelling to support the political viewpoint of a politician, that is different from journalism. In my case, that's why I went to graduate school for journalism, to what one of my colleagues referred to as reform school.
You had to wash off your hands.
I did cleanse myself of my unrighteousness. Thank you very much. But to go immediately from running the Republican National Committee and doing so with callous disregard for the truth, and to then be placed onto a platform where you're given the same credential to walk into the NBC headquarters as Chuck Todd has or any of the other Kristen Welker, that seems like a step too far in this evolution of folks from political work to press work.
And Jen Psaki, the former press secretary for Biden, has a platform on MSNBC, right? And she spoke out in response to the McDaniel fiasco, noting that it's not just about views. It's not Republicans versus Democrats. I can quote part of this. It's not about red versus blue. It's about truth versus lies, service to the country versus to one man committed to toppling the government democratic system.
But by every, that standard, every, you only, the Liz Cheneys say, you only get that little tiny sliver of the Republican Party who represents honest disregard.
Yeah, but it's not the media's obligation to give a voice to lies.
Yes.
To dangerous lies. And it's a mistake to think that there's some kind of false equivalency there. I mean, it is false equivalency. There's a false equivalency to think that you have to have somebody who is a pro-Trump mouthpiece to hear the other side. They're a legitimate conservative views like Liz Cheney's that deserve an audience.
Boy, I agree with that 100%. I really think that you're onto something there in saying that this is skewing of American politics, of American culture, by the outrageous behavior of Donald Trump that has so changed our society, frankly. It has changed our politics. And I think we are not yet to the point in the mainstream media and the respected news organizations of our time, we're not yet there in warning people about how seriously we are at risk.
And initially, she said in the Meet the Press interview, McDaniel said something to the effect, yes, Biden won fair and square.
He's legitimately elected.
But was it Kristen Welker interviewing her? Was prepared with the comeback saying, well, just in 2023, which is a very short time ago, you said the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. So did you just have a come to Jesus moment so that you can buy your Trump Bible?
She was taking one for the team.
She said, I took one for the team.
Yeah, then you pay the consequences for that.
Well, the famous quote I used it on the roundtable the other day, is from the boxing promoter Bob Arum, who said, I was lying then and I'm telling the truth now.
Of course.
You know, to bring it back to NBC, which is the locus of this latest chapter of debate, Tim Russert was an example of somebody who went back and forth. And I think in 2024, there's a lot less of going back and forth from flackery to journalism. But he was an example of someone who, like Rex was saying, a Democratic partisan, you know, worked for people like Mario Cuomo and Senator Moynihan. But he's the gold standard that's upheld on that show that everyone's been missing since his untimely death. And I think, you know, people like George Stephanopoulos in a past era, yeah, they were working for a White House. They were putting forward a point of view. But I think the sidelines have been widened in the Trump era. You know, there used to be generally an agreed upon truth and everything was in the game. It was all kind of kosher. The tax cut is 2.7%. Well, actually, the document is 2.9%. The debate has changed so much in the past decade now, to the point where someone like Sean Spicer on his first weekend in the White House said, there are more people standing in this photo than in this photo. Don't believe what your eyes show you. And he ends up getting a soft landing on broadcast television afterwards. So I think the rules and the ground, it's shifted a little bit. It just has.
Yeah.
If I was still an editor, I would facetiously recommend the following. You know, when you write about a politician and you'll say Mario Cuomo, D, New York, D for Democrat, or Nelson Rockefeller, R for New York, I believe we should institute a G for gaslight.
Not Green Party. Save your letters.
No. Right. Gaslight.
Gaslight. Good point. And certainly we don't use the term, we ought not use the term GOP, because there is nothing grand or old about the Trump Party. That is not the GOP of old. That is not Dwight Eisenhower's party. It isn't even John McCain's party or Mitt Romney's party. Just a little editing sidelight there. I would ban that if I were an editor still.
Do you think that Chuck Todd, whose reputation, among other things, was not as the strongest or strongest-willed person they ever had behind a microphone, the fact that he was as critical and was the first to be critical of this NBC decision prompted the others to do the same? Or in other words, had he not said anything, would they have just swallowed it?
I don't think they would have swallowed it. I think it would have been fallen on somebody else. But I'm, by the way, less critical of Chuck Todd than other people. He interviewed a lot of people live in very difficult situations to try to keep somebody in an era of lying, as we've been talking about in politics, not just stating facts differently. He, I think, did a pretty good job as host of Meet the Press in trying to do interviews. People are always second-guessing him for not asking tough follow-up questions.
Yeah, I didn't get asked follow-up questions.
Yeah, but, you know, it's pretty tough when you have 5.5 minutes to do an interview to keep people on track when they're trying to answer a question with 2 minutes with each answer.
I thought Kristen Welker and Chuck Todd in the interview that followed were awesome, mm-hmm. that they didn't just roll over in shock and say nothing and let it slide.
And he told Kristen Welker that he was going to do that before they went on the air that morning. Yeah, he said, I'm not going to let this go unsaid. And he might have. I don't know if he actually told his bosses.
It doesn't come back to money, too, though, for NBC. Yet they made a ridiculous, tactical, horrible error. I think you're right, Ira, that heads should probably will roll. But their bigger priority will be the big money makers who they already have on the air, that they don't want to lose them.
Yeah, Rachel Maddow, she's bigger than MSNBC keeping her one night a week at this point.
Hmm.
No doubt about it.
Good point. All right, this is not the last we will have heard of that. And we will invite your thoughts on this, by the way. Media at WAMC.org is how you communicate with us if you have some thoughts. I'm Rex Smith here with Ian Pickus and Barbara Lombardo and Ira Fussfeld. We are the Media Project. Another big topic that is banging around is this effort to ban TikTok, which is going through Congress. A remarkable effort that is legislation that the House passed to effectively ban TikTok, to require that TikTok be sold to an American firm. President Joe Biden says that he will sign it. It's kind of a remarkable situation. TikTok is used by 150 million Americans, including, by the way, the White House. And yet we now have the Democrats, many of them, perhaps most Democrats in Congress, signing on to what was initially a Trump proposal, and Donald Trump going the other way now under the influence of a big donor, apparently saying, no, let's not do that. But I have mixed feelings about banning TikTok. Any of you in favor of this?
I love TikTok. Mm-hmm. I may be the oldest person on TikTok, but I find it
well, Joe Biden.
Oh, maybe not. He snuck in. And I find it endlessly entertaining, but I also am able to, in my own mind, parse out what could be garbage and what is just simply entertainment for me, which is food reviews and a variety of topics that the algorithm has prepared for me. The more serious question is whether or not China is able to find out stuff about the users that we would not like to have them find out. And my position on that is, welcome to the internet. In my view, we're at risk of virtually everything we do of being exposed of what we're doing.
I think that's true. If the government wants to have its employees not have TikTok on their devices, I think that's maybe understandable and doable. But the thought of saying that everything's going to be okay if we have American ownership of TikTok is naive, I think.
And, on this Chinese iPhone.
Oh, my God. And Margaret Sullivan had an interesting article, opinion piece in The Guardian, and she points out that a major investor in the parent company of TikTok is a billionaire named Jeff Yass, who's the biggest institutional shareholder of the shell company that merged with Truth Social.
Right.
So when we say American-owned, I mean, who's going to control it? Is that really going to make us feel better?
And we really do have a constitutional restriction against this kind of thing. I can't imagine that that legislation, if it is passed by Congress and signed by the president to ban TikTok, I can't imagine that can pass constitutional scrutiny, because think back to the Pentagon Papers case, in which the government tried to restrain the New York Times and the Washington Post from publishing this information about the history of the Vietnam War, and the Supreme Court stopped them. Let me read this, actually. This is what Justice Hugo Black wrote. He said, "The word security is a broad, vague generality, that is like national security, whose contour should not be invoked to abrogate the fundamental law embodied in the First Amendment." So, the First Amendment requires us to deal with such threats as this in defense of free speech. If we don't, who's going to get banned next? I mean, what's to stop a future president from saying there's national security at risk because of what MSNBC or WAMC is broadcasting?
Well, we already see Trump has already told us he wants to do that. Long before this Rona McDaniel business, he's been critical of NBC and wants to see it regulated and or put out of business. And everybody sort of laughs and said, well, that's not going to happen. Well, who knows what the heck is going to happen if Trump is reelected?
I look at this as just an interesting entry in the race for Congress to find some way to regulate these behemoth social media companies that have changed virtually every aspect of American life. And we pay special attention to it here in the Northeast because one of the senators we cover, Richard Blumenthal, is constantly beating the drum for investigating companies like Facebook and Instagram and Twitter for the harm that they potentially pose for young people. And if you look at, Congress trying to regulate Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, it's always one or two key steps behind. So with this TikTok ban, I assume it'll work out in a way where people aren't going to have their app disappear overnight off their phone. There's just too much to lose here. And nobody wants 150 users mad at them if they're running for reelection. But in terms of speech, that's the bigger issue. After the 2016 election, there was intense focus about misinformation spreading on Facebook. And I don't know, in 2024, after all the congressional hearings and Mark Zuckerberg sweating his way through coming before Congress, that it's meaningfully changed in any way.
In fact, I think it's fallen off because we have seen the pushback from the right saying, well, efforts to hold back disinformation actually is affecting the free speech rights of the right wing. And so you have X, formerly Twitter, now just awash in garbage and flagrant lies because Elon Musk got rid of moderation.
Can we pause on that issue for 1 second? Did anyone see Jim Jordan on 60 Minutes on the latest episode with Leslie Stahl?
I did not.
I saw a clip.
No.
Well, a lot of Americans are unsure and have questions about the last election. How did that happen?
Right. So how could that possibly have happened? Yes, it could have happened because of misinformation. And we see it still. Like I had a friend from my childhood who appeared on Facebook reposting a piece which takes issue with what's going on in Ukraine and undermines the support in Ukraine for the Zelensky government. This is a piece that it sure looks to me like this has got to be Russian misinformation that is being spread. Someone who supposedly just came back to America from visiting Ukraine and is reporting that a lot of the people are saying, you know, this all could be over. We could have let this stop. We didn't have to have all this destruction. So I wrote to my friend on Facebook, this sure looks like Russian propaganda to me. I think that you should be careful about reposting this stuff that you don't know, because we know that there are state players at work on social media platforms. My friend wrote back, well, it was posted by a friend of this person who wrote it seems to be a friend of a friend, so I tend to believe it. What does friend mean on social media? My point is that we are unknowingly, I think, allowing a lot of garbage, misinformation, intentional propaganda that is intent on disturbing what's going on in America. We're allowing that to happen, and we're actually in worse shape than we were in 2016 or in 2020.
So what would you say is the media's role, the traditional mainstream media's role in dealing with stuff that is being distributed via TikTok? Do we report it? Do we ignore it?
Do we report the misinformation? I think keep digging out where the misinformation's coming from. Yeah. What else can you do? I don't think banning TikTok is the answer. And the difficulty is because of the segmentation of the audiences, the way we have it now, the way people are going to where they feel comfortable, you're not going to get people like my conservative friend from childhood buying any effort to keep them on the straight and narrow, I'm afraid.
What does all this mean for the, you've been talking for years on this program about news literacy, and there was a professor in Stony Brook who I guess was the spearhead of this movement. Mm. A lot of this comes down to being able to read something or hear something and in your own mind factor in what is right and what is not right, and as opposed to just swallowing everything whole. Talk about something that, a problem that existed when it was just print and the traditional media, it's gotten exponentially worse.
And to Rex's point, you have a platform like Twitter that has given fringe conspiracists a blue check mark and removed blue check marks from actual mainstream fact-checking operations. Look at the Baltimore Bridge collapse. You know, you had people like Laura Logan saying this is a cyber attack and a war is upon us. And that stuff spreads way faster than the more difficult to confirm, slow, investigatory journalism that's going to come out to explain how this happened.
Absolutely. It is outrageous, the kind of stuff that we've seen, actually. Now because I tend to look at old-fashioned media platforms, I miss some of this. But the conspiracy theories that are out there, you mentioned Lara Logan, the former CBS News correspondent, which is just outrageous. The notion that the ship was cyber attack, QAnon is going on, terrorism may have been at play. You know, we don't really know what goes on.
Maria Bartiromo said it was because of immigration.
That's it. It's the wide open border. That's why the ship slipped onto the bridge. I don't quite make that connection. I don't know quite how she did that. But there again is somebody who used to be considered a valid commentator. What in the world happened to her? And how do we deal with that kind of thing when you have such ridiculous stuff coming on to big platforms?
I would say we're losing. I mean, let's call it like it is.
Well, we have to resist the temptation to give loud voices to the insanity that's being said. I mean, we might have an obligation to, and we do have an obligation to let the world know that there are conspiracy theories that are being thrown about, but not to go into depth and give them lots of airtime or print time, because that gives them the aura of truth.
Very hard when you have a platform as big as, say, Fox News, which has a lot of viewers who are not quite as far to the fringe as, say, the Lara Logans have become. But it's really hard to get people to understand that Fox News is platforming the election deniers and the liars with impunity. I don't know how you even combat anything that is that powerful.
Yeah, I was going to say the rules have changed, but I don't even think there are any rules anymore.
One more thing about Baltimore before we leave it. What do you think about the mayor's request that the media stop using the video of the bridge collapse?
It's obviously nonsense. It was a dramatic video. It did not include anything akin to the people jumping out of the World Trade Center, which most organizations didn't show. But it was such a dramatic, and it helped actually see what happened as you followed the ship going along, it's meandering its way and finally crashing.
Yeah, I guess you can't blame a guy for asking, but he should have known better. I thought it was, by all accounts, a relatively mild image. I do feel terrible for the people who lost loved ones and people now whose fear of bridges has grown exponentially.
I think
if you're looking at things like that are far away, would you treat it the same way if it was local? So if a horrible thing happened to the Kosciuszko Bridge that links Albany and Saratoga counties, would we make the same decision to show kind of that B-roll over and over?
I think I think it shows that a lot of these decisions are individual, have to be made by humans, not by artificial intelligence, because that depends, as Ira was saying, on how close up it is, on whether you're showing individual lives being lost, like the bodies plummeting down outside the World Trade Center. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right.
Yeah, I think he'd rethink that and would realize that was not the right thing to say. But he was caught up in the moment of this initial tragedy, and you can't blame him for that.
All right. That would be the end of our time for this week. Speaking of initial tragedies. No.
As opposed to total tragedy.
Ah, yes. We're grateful to you folks for joining us this week. I'm Rex Smith, here with Ian Pickus, Barbara Lombardo, Ira Fussfeld, and to our producer, Dave Gustina. We hope you'll join us again next week on The Media Project.
Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Substack columnist of the Upstate American, Rex Smith, Barbara Lombardo, the former editor of the Saratogian and a journalism professor at the University at Albany, Ira Fussfeld, publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, and WAMC news director Ian Pickus. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.